would like to help out in the continuing education discussion that we're having today. As on the courses a little bit, we have society real estate appraiser courses. We have an investment analysis. We have fundamentals of real estate, advanced real estate investment analysis, case studies in real estate taxation, and we're developing a new course in construction and design. And that's basically the extent of my comments, is just to make everyone aware of what we're doing at the university, and we're trying very hard to educate those who voluntarily come to the university to take courses to improve their knowledge of the real estate industry and the changes that are taking effect, to better themselves, to deal with personal affairs of individuals that they represent. Thank you.
Question for the members of the committee, Mrs. Mills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many people do you find that are enrolled in these courses are from the profession?
As from the profession as licensees, is that your question?
That are licensed and are working.
Okay, I would say, as a general rule in the neighborhood, and I'm estimating from 10 to 30%, depending on the type of class. And I would say that'll cover the range there. The type of student that we have are some that are pursuing a degree, some that are taking the courses as an elective for a accounting degree or a sociology degree. We have a number of people who are just interested in finding out more about real estate, who are buyers and sellers who would come in contact with the real estate agent, and various people pursuing other interests. We have some attorneys and dentists occasionally that will come out and take a course or two that want to just improve their own knowledge in the real estate.
From 10 to 30 percent would be...
I would say in each given classes, or as an aggregate, that 10 to 30 percent of our students would be licensees working.
And then what you are saying is that you'd like to see mandatory continuing education, and looking at those figures, that the people are not motivated at this time on their own volition for the type of courses.
I think you're correct in saying that they're probably motivated to get more education, but are not currently allocating the time and need a little bit of encouragement to do it. And my argument is that we have the facility to do it, and we just need a little more encouragement to get
the government to get them out
there. All right.
Well, Mrs. Munson, if I may, along the same lines, well, has the Anchorage Board of Realtors offered some continuing education that is not involved with the university in recent months or years? I don't know, and that's why I'm asking the question.
I don't feel like I'm qualified to answer that question. We have worked with the Board of Realtors some, but we have not, to my knowledge, jointly given courses for...
I didn't ask whether you jointly. I said, have they done it on their own separate from your operations in recent years?
I think I'll decline comment on that.
I'm getting a nod from the back of the room from one of the commission members, at least. Go ahead, Mrs. Munson. You asked. You finished? Okay. Mr. Randolph? Oh, you had some first. Okay, go ahead, Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It's not Mr. Randolph. It's Mr. Halford, for those of you who don't have a visual contact here.
Thank you. You mentioned the 30-hour requirement. I wonder if you could go through that just a little bit more specifically. Exactly what's included in that 30 hours? Is that 30 classroom hours or college semester hours? Exactly what it is? And what's it going to take the professional out of his time that we're going to encourage him to spend in the educational system?
Good question. That's one of the...
Get your mic closer to you. Go ahead.
One of the vague areas, in my opinion, is that how do we define what an hour of credit is. 3-hour university credit class, it's going to take a lot of those to fill up the 30-hour requirement, where if you go 3 hours a week for 15 weeks or so, one course would almost take up your 30-hour requirement. So naturally, I'm of the opinion that a 3-hour class would be 3 hours toward the 30-hour credit or something along that line. But it definitely has to be defined what an hour is. And I see a lot of ambiguities and problems arising with classes. Are they qualified? Are they not? And I think if the university were able to provide the continuing education, that would be pretty cut and dry.
Mr. Chairman, this is Sue Juno. May I interrupt, please?
Go ahead.
We can't hear that witness speaking at this time. I think he's away from the mic.
He wasn't so far from the mic, but LASCOM has been, you know, blowing blue smoke at us this morning. I'll ask him to speak up. Generally, your conclusion, sir, was that you feel that the hour, what is an hour of continuing education, is not well defined, and this would be an appropriate role for the university.
Correct. The hour toward the 30-hour credit is loosely defined at this point, as well as the courses that will be submitted for approval on the continuing education.
How would you define a credit hour toward the 30-hour? Or you're speaking in favor of it. What hour are you talking about that you're speaking in favor?
The classroom hour. That one course, a three-credit course, would count toward the 30-hour requirement.
As 3 hours?
As 3 hours, uh-huh.
So you're saying 30 hours as a continuing education requirement, which compares to a bachelor's level major in that field, just about.
30 hours is one full semester, one full year in college.
That's correct. So I guess what I'm saying is that I'm not purporting to argue that we need a full year of college, but or 30 hours of classroom hours. But that if we're going to say 30 hours, I don't think one course is going to do it. So if we use the university system, I think that the hours will need to be revised or at least looked at and put on a schedule. And as we're trying to determine, are we going to have a 30-hour requirement, or are we going to phase in over a period of time a full degree, or what exactly are we going to do? I think there's a lot of ambiguities there that we've just pointed to here.
Mr. Halford, do you have any work further?
Basically, I'm trying to get to what amount of time do you think the individual in the profession should have to spend as a continuing education requirement, whether we're going to call it semester hours, classroom hours. Should he have to spend 100 hours in a two-year period? Should he have to spend 50 hours? What should he actually have to spend in seminars, in classes, in continuing education?
Meantime, how does he pay the overhead and the groceries?
Really? I don't really feel qualified to state exactly the number of hours that would be the right number. I think that's something that really needs to have a lot of thought given to it. I think we can look at some of the continuing education requirements placed on the teachers and members of the bar and the certified public accountants and pattern similarly after what they have done. The number of hours that would be required at the university level, I don't think that I'm here to state exactly how many or whether we need 30 hours or 50 hours or a degree or exactly what. My points are that we have the facility, and when told, or we will help in the process of determining how many hours would be reasonable when we first introduce continuing education, that we have the facilities to give the courses and that we go under the semester hour rule. And I just haven't answered your question exactly. It's a good question, but I don't think that I can determine, or the university real estate program can determine, how many hours is the right number of hours. I think industry, together with the state, perhaps, with the commission, a joint decision on that.
He's next, unless Rick's got some.
Just one more question that you kind of brought up. When you separate the university from industry, how much experience do you have in the practical application in the industry itself?
About 3 years.
Thank you.
Let's not get into defining a year any more than an hour, Mr. Randolph.
Okay, just one observation, a couple observations. One, and in all due respect, it seems to me you have a substantial conflict of interest.
Definitely.
Continuing education and filling up the classrooms at the university. And that would work.
In a way, he pretty much disclosed that, I think.
I think you too. I just thought it was worthwhile pointing out. The other thing is using the university, and I would guess you would opt for almost exclusive use of the university to fulfill these requirements. That would work fine in Anchorage and to some degree, I suppose, in Fairbanks. Other than those two locations, however, and particularly in the smaller communities, it would be very difficult and very expensive for people involved in the profession to avail themselves of that specific course of action. No pun intended. Do you want to comment on that?
I think it's a very good point, Mr. Randolph, and I don't have an answer to it. I'd love to have a university in each one of our cities, but... I don't think it's very practical, so...
You mean like Mr. Atwood and Mr. Snedden, you want to spend all that money we don't have yet?
Really. I don't have an answer to that one, clearly.
Okay, I guess just an observation is I think that it's if continuing education is in fact important, it's absolutely imperative that we keep it as broad as possible so that it doesn't work an undue hardship on everyone.
Any more, Mr. Randolph?
That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Mrs. Munson had another question. When you're not answering a question, once you release the button, it's probably all right, but then if you kind of murmur, cough, or a wind blows by, then it cuts down the volume on the other people's microphones.
Yes. Now that the university has the real estate course, are there still courses being offered by individual brokers in Anchorage?
Mr. Chairman, this is Fairbanks again. Could we interrupt?
Go ahead. Are we still having some problems with the circuit?
We are all fading away to nothing.
Well, everybody's testifying about the same way they were previously, so maybe there's a problem with Alaskom if somebody's on the circuit here who could call them and ask them to monitor to make sure this thing works. We'd appreciate it. And I'll just ask everybody here to gobble your microphones until they tell us that we're too loud. Go ahead, Mrs. Munson.
You came through very clear then.
I was about an inch away from the microphone. It's not designed to work that way. Everybody munch on your microphones from now on until they tell us that it's working better. Go ahead, Mrs. Munson.
I just asked the question if courses are being given by real estate brokers or other people since the university put in their program.
Well, I think the real answer to that question is that we do not educate people to pass the real estate exam. Our courses are designed to educate people with the real estate process, in various ways, the taxation, the financing, the fundamentals, and so on. Some of the material will overlap with the licensing course, how many square feet an acre, and those types of things, but we do not offer a course to pass a real estate exam and have no intentions of doing so.
After you had your degree, did you take a course to pass the exam?
No, ma'am. I just picked up a book and I read it and took the exam and passed it. I guess I'd like to go on record also to say that as I am a licensed real estate salesman and a licensed real estate security salesman.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Randolph. Close the mic. Please.
Yes, Mr. Ramsey. I'd like to just follow up on that a little bit. What's your opinion of the reliability of the test in fact, testing whether a person is adequate to be out in the field performing?
I would support Mr. Bowden's comment that I think the test as it is designed is pretty good, that it does what it set out to do, and it's fairly standardized across the United States, and I think it is a good introductory level type exam. But as members of the public and people that come in contact with real estate agents, they don't determine, it's not visual of who just passed the exam and who has been in the business for quite some time. In the case of the accounting profession, you have accountants, public accountants, and certified public accountants. And that's kind of personally what I'd like to see in the real estate community, so that we will have recognition among the community and the public at large of the division of competency and levels of experience among the real estate practitioners.
Okay, just one follow-up question then. If the test does adequately indicate the competency of the person involved, would you favor the test being given or some similar test, certainly not the same test over and over again, but a relatively similar test given at 2-3-4 year intervals to everybody in the profession?
No, Mr. Randolph, I wouldn't support that. What I would support is that tests be given in the courses that are taken for continuing education, and it be a requirement that the student pass those exams to be able to continue on.
As when you listed off the courses that were available, it seemed to me they were fairly specific courses, like one in real estate law and et cetera. Wouldn't it be better in the public interest to have people test on their general overall knowledge than on a specific thing that may never hardly ever come into play as in their everyday functioning as a real estate salesman or broker.
For a reason I'm going to explain in a moment, that'll have to be the last question from the committee. Go ahead, Mr. Ernst. Close to the mic, please.
Well, it's a good question. Do we dictate the continuing education courses that the practitioners are to take? And I don't think I have an answer for it. There are certain basic information that you'd like to teach them to continue, but I think the educational continuing programs that are in effect now give some type of flexibility toward the type of courses that that practitioner can take. And I think that's the extent of the answer.
We only have 15 minutes left for the teleconference network, and they've been nice to us and given us a few more minutes. It is dedicated for other purposes from 12 until 3 with the hearing, I believe, on the natural resources budget subcategory, which Representative Smith is chairing. So I think we are also finished with our witnesses who are not members and people who are attending and observing who are not members of the commission. That is true here in Anchorage, is it not? I believe that is. Is there anyone along the teleconferencing network who is not a member of the commission who has not yet testified? Mr. Ramsey, I guess we just have to cut you off there because of the time problem.
Thank you very much.
I have a bunch more questions, but I don't have time for them. Anyone along the teleconferencing network who has a witness, wishes to testify, who is not a member of the commission? Okay, I think what we'll use the next 14 or 13 minutes and 11 seconds for is to basically solicit just some general informal comments from commission members. The chairman was at least in attendance in Juneau. Commission members are here. I guess between here, Fairbanks, and Juneau, at least a few minutes ago, we had 5 of the 7 commission members. We will be soliciting your formal testimony later. Juneau, do you still have Mr. Youngquist there, and can you hear us well enough?
Mr. Youngquist is standing by, and I hear you very clearly, Chairman Brown.
Very fine. I'll ask the commission members maybe to pull a couple of chairs up here, and maybe the commission members in Fairbanks and in Juneau can join us, and Mr. Youngquist can just offer some comments. Lance, I imagine you probably want to comment about your letter, which is in the appendix to the Blue Report. You may have to repeat yourself again to meet legal requirements after the gavel goes down in January. And also, I think Mr. Bloom from staff is here now. I'm going to request that Mr. Bloom solicit from the Division of Legislative Audit a follow-up comment based upon a reply to the members, the commission members' comments that are at the end of the report. So we get a report back from the Division of Legislative Audit as to their view of Mr. Youngquist's comments and the other commissioners' members' comments that are there. Mr. Bloom, just because I'm going to forget it otherwise, I appointed two subcommittees. You should ask me later about them, and I'm going to change them this afternoon anyway. Lance, you should have heard the Glenn Miller Band. They had trombone players better than you used to be last Friday in Fairbanks. Go ahead.
Fred, I'm assuming you can hear me all right. I'm wondering if perhaps if it's okay with you to maybe have the members of the group there ask us questions rather than have us comment on the report. Would that be acceptable to you?
I think it would be. And then you can comment on the report later and we'll get this double feedback going. I have a question for you specifically, and maybe other members of the commission wish to comment. We have this short time available. You heard Mr. Bean's testimony, concerns that he had about how prospective regulations which are being discussed, at least with regard to the degree of supervision required of a salesperson by a broker and possibly the continuing education requirements, might restrict or severely hamper people who are in the rural areas and wish to be licensed. I'm interested in your comments on that to start with.
I think the commission is very much aware of this problem, and of course statutorily it is required that salesmen do have that supervision for the 2 years before they can become a broker. We have discussed it at many of our meetings. I don't think we have a solution, and as far as I'm aware, we don't have any regulations at the present time that we're considering. In the field of trying to educate these outlying areas. We are currently preparing a manual to assist people to get licensed in those areas. We are also in the process of setting up a mini course type of program that will be given in some of these bush communities. I don't think the commission at this particular time really has a solution on the broker supervision for 2 years.
Okay, many of the people from the profession did leave just now, at least here in Anchorage, because I think they probably have luncheon commitments. One or two are kind of staying in the back room, so I don't know whether there are further questions or not. I think I'll just ask if the members of the commission have comments about the kinds of things that have been testified about today. And I'll go around the horn. I've had something from the chairman. We can go to Fairbanks for a moment. There are two commission members there. Do they have some just relatively short comments or things that bothered them the most or that they feel they want to make a comment about? Now, first from Fairbanks with regard to the testimony and the questions this morning, not necessarily the audit report. Fairbanks?
This is Maxine in Fairbanks. Gary Wilkin has just left, but Karen Morris is here and she would like to make a comment.
Chairman Brown, I would like to comment specifically on some of the conversation concerning the education suggestion. The question was asked, couldn't our association fulfill these educational programs so that we did not need to go into a mandatory program? Someone pointed out, but I'd like to clarify, that every licensee is not required to become a member of the Realtor Association. Consequently, we are talking about 2,500 people who are licensed in the state, of which over one half, around 1,500, are members of the State Association of Realtors. We feel that there are a lot of people who are not availing themselves of the courses that are now being put on through the university and also through the association, the local boards, and through the National Association. I think that it's pretty well taken that the responses to date from most of the industry has been that there is a need for education. Granted, there is certainly a diversion of opinion as to whether it should be mandatory or voluntary. However, I think we all recognize that if we were given the choice of should we be nice enough to send in our licensees on a voluntary basis, or are we going to comply with the law and send them in, of course we're going to take the easy way out and not send our money in. I think that's rather a simplified example of education. It is very easy for us in our day-to-day business to not attend courses because maybe we don't want to travel far enough to take them, or if they are being given on a local basis, we're busy that day, we don't take the time to do this, we're all guilty of this, and I think that we need some incentive. Mr. Ramsey said we need a little encouragement. We need very strong encouragement. We need a push. And I personally feel, based on my years in the business and my own experience, and now being a member of the commission, that I would be one of the first people to be very happy to sit through a mandatory course because it can do nothing but help me, and I think that will help everyone who is working in our industry.
Also, then you have a perfect excuse for your clients.
Good point.
Okay, we only have 7 or 6 minutes left, and just some comments. Ms. Mazur, and Mr. Calhoun are here in Anchorage. And Ms. Mazur, because the microphone is closer to you, do you have any short comments or the one or two matters which were your major concerns this morning?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I don't know where to begin, so I'll begin with my notes as they came. One of my comments to some of the...
Mr. Chairman, may we interrupt?
They can't
yes,
hear me.
Yes, you have problems hearing again? Go ahead.
Yes, would you speak a little closer to her mic, please?
Okay, we're all just going to have to keep gobbling the microphones.
Thank you. You have to remember, I'm used to speaking at the Assembly Hall, and then you don't have to talk to the microphone and talk anyplace. Mr. Chairman, the public doesn't really understand, in my mind, what the Real Estate Commission, I'm really not even sure your group does, what the Real Estate Commission can and cannot do. We cannot do it. We have no authority except as far as license law regulation is concerned. A lot of the complaints that come to the Real Estate Commission are complaints that we have no authority over, and I think it's important for us to recognize that, and that's why I think that the executive secretary is the person who that should be the first one to get the complaint. Then maybe we need to, in order to avoid conflicts, have one or two commission members also involved with the complaint to decide whether indeed we have jurisdiction. Then it should go to the investigative section. If that's not proper, then the investigative section, in my mind, should first decide whether indeed we have any authority, not decide whether or not the case has merit, because we still cannot go through with it, and we're wasting a lot of our time and energies, it seems to me. So I would like to see us go in that direction somehow, and I don't know yet how, and I think we need to discuss it as far as the Real Estate Commission is concerned.
Okay, in part you're getting into what's in the audit report, and you'll have a shot at that later.
Right.
I was more concerned about other matters that may have occurred to you as a result of the testimony by other people this morning.
Okay, well, I think Mr. Randolph made the point that the industry should be responsible for its people as far as education requirements is concerned, and unfortunately, I have to agree with him, and I've argued with many brokers in this town about the fact that they personally are responsible for whether or not a salesperson is really a good, effective salesperson and is qualified to take its broker's examination. Unfortunately, a good many of them are only interested in filling their desk spaces and their body, you know, their body count is all they're worried about, and they don't want to take that responsibility. Whether or not the government should take it, I personally don't think so. However, the majority of the people in the business seem to think so, so I have to go along with that consideration. One last point, as far as educational requirements are concerned, I think it's the commission's intention, at least this point in time, that 30-hour requirement is actual 30 hours, not 30 semester hours. And we would certainly, I'll speak for myself, but I think most of the commission members feel the same way, would want a much broader base educational program than just the university's programs.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Calhoun, looks like you've got 3+ minutes. I'll stretch it a little bit.
I tried, Keith.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to address a couple topics that came up that I feel are important. Number one is the Executive Secretary to the Real Estate Commission and his responsibilities and goals. One of his jobs, in actuality, what he does is he serves as a paralegal. He receives many calls into his office on a daily basis and people just requesting basic information. I don't believe that job should be taken away from him. I think it's people need direction as where to go. As far as the real estate commissioners getting involved in investigation processes, I've been on the commission a year. I'm one of the youngest members of the commission. As far as I know, we do not investigate any cases ourselves personally because of a potential conflict of interest. Also, if there's any cases or any requests for information directed to the executive secretary concerning any of the commission members or his wife or her firm, he automatically turns that over to the to a investigator to process that. He does not even talk to the people. It's an automatic thing. He just turns it over to the investigators. In the legislative audit report, as far as the commissioners, monetary settlements, making some small monetary settlements, acting as an arbitration board, I'm in favor of that. Anything that the Real Estate Commission can do that will benefit the general public, I'm totally in favor for. I think there are some, the state is going to have to realize that we do have some budget restrictions in which we have to operate, however. I believe that the Real Estate Commission should have more direction, or perhaps to give more direction to occupational licensing. For instance, a topic was brought up about a hearing. Presently, we don't even have any funds to have a hearing. It cost us about $10,000 to have a hearing to the due process procedure.
I'll break you off right there. That's because last year everybody said we were broke. This year everybody says we're rich. I don't know if I should believe anybody anymore. You did get into the audit, and we're stealing almost in a few seconds somebody else's time, but do you have some things that you feel were not within the audit but testimony by the people today? Just maybe one or two more comments.
Not at this time.
Okay, and Lance, for the chairman in Juneau, thank you very much, and for Ms. Morris and Fairbanks, thank you very much, for the witnesses and other participants who have still been here, and we will be scheduling a hearing very early in the session on this again, and we'll be requesting more formal input from the commission members and more comments about the audit report, and also what appears that I hope will become a dialogue in the follow-up of the audit report along the lines of my request to the staff to request more input from legislative audit. Mr. Youngquist, the chairman of the commission, do you have a parting shot before we conclude and turn the circuit over to the next committee?
No, Mr. Chairman, we do appreciate the opportunity today, and we look forward to meeting with you during the legislative session.
Okay, fine. We'll adjourn this portion of the meeting. Soldatna, do you have Mr. Malone, or did he come to Anchorage, or will he this noon?
I haven't heard anything from him.
I may run into him this afternoon, or he may go to judiciary, I don't know. We will adjourn at this time. The subject will come up probably around the 16th to the 25th of January before the committee in Juneau. We'll use the teleconferencing network again at that time so that we can minimize travel expenses for people who wish to attend this afternoon. We will reconvene. Our agenda says 1:15. We'll shoot for that. I'll be happy if we make it by 1:30. We'll be getting into staff reports and other subjects, and some corrections on the subcommittee assignments I made this morning. I thought I was thinking of dealing with only one. I should have been dealing with two, and other related matters, and maybe just a short discussion of the sunset and the agenda of the committee in the next 2-3 meetings. So with that, we'll stand in adjournment until 1:15 this afternoon, and we will not be using the teleconferencing network at that time.
Mr. Chairman.
Call the meeting back to order. It is 2 o'clock this afternoon. Some of us were a little late for lunch, and then Mr. Halford was testifying and participating upstairs in another meeting. This is the House Commerce Committee. It is December 29 still. November 29, excuse me. And on the agenda are staff reports and other items. I'll start with the other items first. I misspoke myself this morning, and with regard to the subcommittee, I indicated that is only on the Board of Marine Pilots. That is, the subcommittee on the Board of Marine Pilots is to be Representative Munson. Matter of fact, I'll ask Representative Osterback to chair it, and Representative Munson and Representative Randolph. With regard to a subcommittee on the Board of Welder Examiners, I'll make myself chairman, and it will be Representative Munson and Representative Randolph, because they were here. See how this happens to you when you come to a meeting. I have previously appointed, and letters should have gone out from Mr. Bloom, I believe they did, a finance subcommittee of the Commerce Committee for this for the current period in the next session, consisting of Representative Malone, Chairman, and Representative Halford. And they are to look into the matters that are of interest within the jurisdiction of the Commerce Committee with regard to budget matters, have liaison with the appropriate Finance Subcommittee from the Finance Committee. So basically, we know what the Finance Committee is doing that's in our interest, and they know what we're doing if it affects them. Mr. Halford.
At the National Conference of State Legislators.
Right past the ashtray.
I don't know exactly where the discussion is going to be on committee on transportation. How come I didn't end up on a committee on that group? What did I do wrong? Well, that means you can run around and do what you want. That's probably better than that. I'm on council, you know. We're supposed to be able to get on this first, but maybe I was appointed to something and didn't know it. But are there any particular questions with regard to the regulation of transportation? Maybe Alan's got in mind that we should be asking down there to see something from other states.
Well, I've got one, or at least an area of questioning, and that is, to what extent, if at all, has the Federal Trade Commission's current crusade and some of the fashionable accused of being Eastern liberal thinking with regard to deregulation of surface transportation actually cracked into the state legislatures? Senator Kennedy's involved in that, and the FTC testified before our committee, and they sent us follow-up stuff. How is it being treated or accepted, or is it at all happening in this other state legislatures? I would be very interested in that.
California has an air regulation situation that is vaguely like ours, as far as I know.
If you go through the summary, there's seven that could, but then you have to go through the regulations. And California's the only one that the regulations finally come back to be as stringent as ours.
You've made the comment about the transportation point of view that I've been pushing on.
Well, no, I just wondered if you had, because you're always doing some digging, to find some other points of view.
And relative to air transportation in the state.
Transportation, yeah. Well, it's going to be air or surface.
Well, this report that Joyce is reading, the executive summary on right now, is the only piece of work that has come out, to my knowledge. DOT is currently doing another piece of a transportation study. And in a meeting that I had 3 nights ago with Fred Mast, as part of the ATC bill that they're trying to put together, they're going to press very, very heavily for an air and surface transportation rate and tariff study. That's something that is long overdue. They either want the legislature to do it, and if the legislature won't do it, they're prepared to set up a task force of some sort, and at least go part of it.
Started out the Anchorage Chamber presentation with a very broad endorsement of the free enterprise system and how good it was and all the good things it should do.
We are in the record, but keep going.
Then we went on to one of the optical professions that didn't like the way another one of the optical professions was handling their competitive structure, so they wanted some other regulations. And then we went on to the trucking industry, where free enterprise wasn't really all that good, on down the line.
What meeting was this?
Chamber.
Well, they didn't quite say free enterprise wasn't all that good. Isn't that a kind of an interpretation?
Yes, they did. They're a bunch of corporate socialists.
God, that's a great phrase.
It is. I'd
even have heard it before.
I like it. It's good. It applies to more and more people daily.
Probably the best thing was they started out and they said the permanent fund should be managed so as not to compete with banks. And then the last point of that page was that we should have low interest rate loans.
Suspicions confirmed. Okay, Mr. Bloom is calling when he's needed, but that's all right. I think I would just like, because I was going to get an Alan's part now, he's on the phone, kind of just a general throughout your comments, observations, on the record, remember, on what we're doing with Sunset Review and what problems you see. Obviously, because we've all got to tend to our own debt making, me as much as anybody, I have not been able to have at least one hearing on every one of the things that are up before the committee, before the session, as it would have been nice to do. We will have covered at least some of the bases anyway by the time we go in, and we'll have covered all of what. Architects, engineers, land surveyors, barbers, hairdressers, what was the other one? Electrical examiners, welding examiners, marine pilots, real estate commission, and the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. By the time we start, we'll have had at least one hearing on each one of those. And I think that, although at the moment some of this will dovetail into what Alan's got on staff reports, but I am having problems with some of the things we did last session because the Division of Occupational Licensing seems to have gone downhill or have an uphill.
Yep.
And it bothers me.
Sold the bill of goods.
Hostack looked good, and as soon as something or other happened, or maybe just the heat he got in the legislature is more than any sane human being could take, I don't know.
As a matter of fact, that was one of the things that did
I was wondering if that was one of his motives, but anyway, a guy who looked like he was very good for the job was off doing a job in another state agency, you know. And we don't know much about the new director. She's new, and as of the time of the special session, was being herded around and shown the ropes by her subordinates. And we have the same guy running the investigative unit. They have a little bit more of a budget.
Mr. Chairman, that's not the case.
No.
One of the problems that this has contributed significantly to the problems within occupational licensing was the fact that the legislature underfunded that division by, I believe, $150,000.
Even this session?
After we made our recommendation?
This was part of the problem. The occupational licensing public protection budget section had gone through during the front half of the legislative session. Pre-conference committee just sailed right past that particular category when they were dealing with
that. That was a problem, which we, the third problem we should avoid with the subcommittee we're going to have. We had gotten recommendations to the finance committee, and I told them what the problems were. I talked to the chairman, and I had reason to believe that would not happen. Anyway.
This very definitely
if I just believe all that I'm told.
This is why I have been looking very carefully in the budget package that I just gave Mr. Halford is the initial program submission.
You have a similar package for Mr. Malone, I assume.
It's here.
Yeah, we may see him later this afternoon. He might call me. I'm sure.
That's one of the major areas where there has been problems. The boards are definitely underfunded as far as doing their own function. The investigation section, if this is appropriate at this time, Mr. Chairman, I will bring to the committee's attention with a recommendation. A copy of a training seminar that was held in Anchorage on August 24th. I don't see a single area of study on there that deals with any of the aspects of occupational licensing. On the other hand, this was given to me somewhat reliably, a medical investigation was to have been run in Sitka against an unnamed doctor. Mr. Long dispatched Mr. Moore, the investigator here in Anchorage, to go to Sitka to spend 4 or 5 days conducting the investigation there, undermanning in this area where they have a significant case backlog. And Mr. Long did not travel out of Juneau. On the other hand, he has also made two or three, at least as has been reported to me, two or three trips outside for training seminars, related police training seminars.
How can he ever get a new job unless he gets trained?
My suggestion to the committee would be that, and I have a draft letter here, I will not circulate it because I haven't proofread it, would be that the committee send a letter to the chairman of the Budget and Audit Committee requesting the audit division to do an interim audit of the investigation section with a report to be delivered to the committee on or about the 1st of February, if possible.
Yeah, that's fine. I think it's a good idea.
Talk with Mr. Wilkerson. This is possible.
I think in general we need to have a little bit of update on last year's sunset reports anyway. They did do a report on a well. That would be appropriate. Also, we might be interested in at least minor follow-up with regard to other people that were up for sunset review last year but were not yet finished. So maybe that shouldn't be requested at this time, but it's something you might just mention to Wilkerson that might be requested in a later time.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. What
How would they would update their reports on the ATC, the ABC, the health boards, which will still be at issue? What further information has life improved or gotten worse?
without, you know, spending as much time as they do on a full-fledged audit.
Okay, I would
just warn him that we may ask for it, that we're not asking for it now. Right now, all we want is the update on the occupational licensing with the emphasis on the investigation unit. And you can give him the same information.
How much work is there left over from last year? I mean,
everything except the Board of Nursing.
I understand that. How much time are we going to spend on it?
No, the Board of Nursing didn't pass it.
Yeah, the Board of Nursing is mad because we incurred the Senate bill continuing for 4 years and didn't pass all the need amendments.
How much time are we going to spend it?
Well, the Commerce Committee...
He is working on it. He has some problems with it. There may be some constitutional problems with establishing dedicated funds, and it's unfortunately it's expanding to deal with a number of the quasi-judicial agencies of government. We're considering one of two directions, either to specify that it be the ABC, the ETC, Public Utilities Commission, probably the Limited Entry Commission, as specifically designated quasi-judicial bodies, as opposed to just establishing sort of blanket indemnification programs for courts and commissions.
Of course, this comes out of all the things that we had in the ATC bill. We were right, I think. Joyce, I think, expressed opinions we ought to do this on a broad basis.
It's going into the criminal, whole criminal code.
Yeah. And the problem is that the administration has an attitude that it's a private company that has to protect itself from lawsuits rather than being an executive of a state government and also have a governor who's the 61st legislator who has to deal with public policy. Who as governmental entities has the power to influence or control restricting liability completely. And those are two entirely different things. Just because it might cost the state a little bit more in its insurance or self-insurance depending on what you're dealing with doesn't necessarily mean that it's good public policy to limit liability in every case. It's just as though the board of directors of General Motors were allowed to vote to limit their own liability. They would vote to say we're immune from everything, save us money, and this seems to be the attitude of the administration. And when somebody's been injured by an action or an arbitrary action of an administrative agency, I don't really understand what the governor says in a veto message saying that this is arbitrary, capricious, and fattening. And it may be that this, the reason this bill request was put in, it may be that this idea of a fund, an indemnification fund, and take care of the constitutional problems. There are ways of doing that. I could recommend. I know the lawyers, the agency know them. Then at least the governor won't see that as a red flag and have his risk management guy, who just thinks limit liability forever because that's his job. He doesn't think in terms of the broad public considerations, and he does not even understand the area I'm talking about when he's before the Judiciary Committee. I've heard him several times. And then maybe it won't be a red flag for the governor, and we can take care of things like arbitrary abuse of or misuse of power. When you have a public needs situation where you have to have rather summary and quick remedy, and that's the easiest place to make a mistake and the result in causing a terrible injury if you are in error. And yet it may be that there are public reasons why you have to act quickly. And in that area, to say that, oh, well, we shouldn't be liable for suits, and we put you out of business and you're under and you're stuck. Okay. You know, that's preposterous. And that was another one of the reasons the governor gave for vetoing the bill. Anyway, that's coming up. I hope we're going to be able to address some legislation, believe it or not. I hope, other than Sunset, I hope we're going to be able to address some of the things that involve the telecommunications mantle, although this interim, the Senate has a telecommunications committee. I don't know if it's met with a large budget, and there are rumors floating, as there always are around some of those individuals, about what they may or may not be doing or intending to do. Mr. Bloom?
There's basically only two areas that they have been doing any background work on. It's been more staff time on an investigative basis, and I'm not sure really about investigative so much as straight report writing. One is the area of instructional television in rural areas, and they are doing some stuff for the small news stations. But beyond that, the committee has not met and probably will not meet.
Well, they've got some of the big guns in the Senate leadership on name of the committee, and I don't see how they could get those people to come to a meeting. That'd be very unusual to get, you know, Sackett and Holman and Curtula and Ferguson and whoever else, and Coletta all in the same room. And even for
wanted to. In front of the committee members is a response that I got from John Miller, one of the two people that met before the legislature to give a report on the QuickLook project. The cover letter does not address much relative to the actual project itself, but it responds to some federal legislation that's being worked on right now by Senator Adlai Stevenson III's Subcommittee on Science and Technology, Communication Science and Technology, relative to an expanded role for states and for NASA in the Landsat program, providing user vehicles. There is also an additional bill that has been introduced that calls for the creation of a public corporation for satellite technology. The internal, the report itself on Landsat, I have not yet read. It is to be considered more as a draft report to the committee to meet the initial intent of the funding from a year ago when they were supposed to deliver a written report to us in February of this year during the session. It's not a complete report yet and may not. Along with that, you may wish to address the business of Dr. Stringer's.
Oh, yes. Bill Stringer decided that because he has some difference of opinion and he is not convinced to change his mind with John Miller, and John has been very much involved in this, that he decided to back out of the portion of the operations involving remote sensing that involve time value or quick look or that sort of thing, so that the university would have the geophysical institute speaking with one voice, and they are taking the position that they should fund this. We remember what happened in the meeting. They candidly admitted that it was on short notice and they did have a difference of opinion, and we kind of devil's advocated both of them back and forth and got a lot of information out of it. But that is difficult for anybody, even among academia, where criticism and differences are tolerated. It is kind of difficult to present a position before a legislative committee with a couple of guys doing that. So because of that, Bill is kind of out of that part of it. He's still very involved in the stuff that does not involve time value access and the remote sensing library. When it doesn't matter whether you want to get a picture of a cloud or a forest fire, you want a picture of what the trees look in any July or something like that. Information of the sort that is very valuable, probably, to a lot of resource users. And so it may be that that doesn't so much involve telecommunications, it doesn't involve media access, but it's the sort of thing that maybe Mr. Halford and others we could refer, in matters of interest, to Resources Committee and other people. Because, again, that stuff is there, and we still, even with the seminars the two of them have given, we still have an informational problem convincing government and private individuals that the resource is there, that they don't have to use 1927 technology, and some of them don't even know how to read maps yet, or how big an acre is, or various other things that they've told us rather graphically. So we'll be continuing on that. I have told Professor Stanley Merritt that this report right in front of us will be here, that this meeting will be just kind of waved at us, and then it'll be referred to them, and that they will be asked to comment on it extensively at the next meeting. The next meeting will be on telecommunications matters and on the basic first sit-down on the APUC Sunset Review.
When will that next meeting be?
December 17th, here in Anchorage, as you have it on your calendar. And I had hoped that this meeting would have a chance to start talking a little bit about some legislation in the committee. I have not had a chance to review some of it myself. I want to do that with Mr. Bloom before we talked about it in a public meeting. As you can understand, the former chairman is smiling.
I was going to say, how about giving us a list of what we have in the committee?
You can get it from the computer. You know, they got everything but the kitchen sink of this this committee. You know what I said about there has been a bill introduced this morning of that guy who's testifying. So I think that's something you probably have to wait until the January 12th meeting, the 2 days before the session starts. And that will be a major point on the agenda. I don't know if it's necessary, and I don't know if it's going to be required for us to put in some kind of report of our interim committee activities to the Legislative Council or to the leadership. Maybe they're going to require it, I don't know, because at least on the House side, we've basically been dealing with the orthodox standing committees doing our thing, everybody knows it.
I seriously doubt they're going to ask for a committee report.
Yeah, when you saw what happened when the interim reports were requested, they came out with a thing that looked like a New York phone book that almost nobody read except Joyce Munson.
Mr. Chairman, to my knowledge, there is not going to be a requirement for reports. On the other hand, I am in the process now of coming out with what I hope will be comprehensive but not too verbose report on the sunset review process. Basically, I can detail for the committee this time it's going to be in five parts. Section one will deal with a recap and status report of the 11 boards that were dealt with through occupational licensing. Section 2 will deal with the next 10 boards under sunset for occupational licensing. Section 3 will be the ATC. Section 4 will be the APUC. Section 5 will be recommendations for changes to the sunset law, modifications, and procedures that can possibly be jointly adopted by the House and Senate. It'll be a long report, but I think I can keep it at least germane, both in terms of status and indicated directions.
Mr. Malone is very interested in possible changes in the sunset law. There's some realities there we have to address, and that is, if we're going to have this kind of a cycle on review, what percentage of the man hours of a legislature's time should be devoted to sunset constantly? Maybe that was what was intended. Is it practical? Is there a way of still having sunset and not causing that result? I'd like your observations on that in that report, and I'd like the members to think about it, because we will probably be...
Now, I think the only solution is to go to a full-time legislature.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Scylla and Charybdis, Mr. Prado.
Just a brief observation in that specific area. I've been looking very closely at the Colorado experience, as they were the first state.
Yeah, he's been getting stacks of stuff, this big, thick stuff. I don't know if he has time to read it, but it's been sunset from all over the country and from NCSL.
Go ahead. Basically, the...
As a matter of fact, you probably ought to share some of that with him, since he's going to be doing NCSL. So.
Good point. The Colorado experience so far has been to move from individual standing committee referrals from the sunset review process, dealing specifically with regulatory agencies, to go to a joint House-Senate permanent committee that has a continuing oversight responsibility. Probably in the report, I'm going to make a recommendation that the legislature here adopt the same procedure, potentially using a vehicle such as the Administrative Regulations Review Committee as the primary committee for sunset review, so that what the technical procedure would be is the committee would receive an audit, a standing committee would receive the audit report, hold a single hearing with recommendations to that standing committee of the two houses, and allow them to bring in the substantive legislation that would address the problem, so that the standing committees become nothing more than fact-finding and information committees to guide that joint committee in its deliberations. And then they would have to operate on a year-round basis.
Now, somebody said in a related matter that our amendment of the Sunset Law Bill got vetoed by the governor, and somehow I had missed that. Did somebody say that?
SB 86.
Or it was
stalled.
Vetoed.
It was. It wasn't really amending so much as it was just adding additional regulatory bodies.
We added other people to Sunset as well.
However, the Budget and Audit Committee did meet subsequent to the veto, instructed Mr. Wilkerson to proceed with audits on all of those particular areas. Those audits, in fact, will probably be released about Christmas time, pending the approval of the Budget and Audit Committee. And I believe there is a serious intent to go for veto override, so that those particular groups will be up for sunset reviews.
And then there'd be blue books available on them if there was a veto or overridden.
What's the one, the boards of Fish and Game are on, anything else?
Fish and Game, Second Injury Fund,
Human Rights Commission, like Cosmos, OSHA was on there, too.
The governor finally figured out the sunset law took 20% of his total authority over state government. I'll never see another thing go on to that sunset law without a veto over it.
That may... It is an infringement on the executive authority. Tremendous.
Well, he was one of the supporters on it. Concurrent with what's coming down, this leads directly into some work that's being done by the Regulatory Reform Project team led by Bill McConkie. Quite a number of regulations.
He sure gets shuffled around a lot, doesn't he?
I don't know that he's been shuffled so much as he is. Right. He walks around with a hatchet.
That's right. That's right.
And he goes any place he wants to.
That's right.
There are going to be some recommendations coming out of the administration as far as I've been able to determine. One, of course, that I think will benefit both the committee and occupational licensing and others is that any boards and commissions that are currently establishing fees by statute, the proposal will be to allow each board to establish fees by regulation, to increase the fee structure for examinations and license renewals and whatnot, increase their capacity to pay for the same service that they're trying to provide. That should be coming out as a separate bill. However, there are also a number of recommendations for consolidation of various building inspection programs. There's the audit recommendation on the APUC to combine the ATC Pipeline Commission and the APUC that I understand is now being adopted, embraced wholeheartedly by the governor's office. We're going to be seeing bills that create sort of omnibus bureaucracies.
That may be the way out on the sunset deal with the Transportation Commission, though.
Well, it wasn't that long ago we had Alaska Public Services Commission. Everybody said had too much of a workload and had to split it up.
The Pipeline Commission only has one more decision. If the exemption that we passed out of this committee goes on APUC small utilities, and the Transportation Commission...
Oh, that's right. That's still between the House and the Senate in limbo, isn't it?
And if the Transportation Commission's authority is limited, at least in smaller operators, you're not really expanding the Public Utility Commission that much.
Informally, one of the comments that I received from a commissioner on the APUC...
Well, I'm skeptical until I hear more. Go ahead.
That concept of having things welded together... is not necessarily a bad idea. It may be premature, it may be very cumbersome if it's done one shot.
The person saying this was in what position?
The commissioner of the ATC. The idea is generally perceived inside of all three of these organizations as being maybe pretty good, but give them a couple of years. They're asking that if it be done, that it come as sort of a reverse sunset.
Gives them all a chance to find another job.
With the recommendation in the other direction, though, if it's done, one lump sum, you just shove all nine commissioners into the same place, you keep them there, and then by attrition, move back to a smaller sized commission with a little bit...
Pipeline Commission you really don't need after one more decision.
It's a matter of when that decision is going to be rendered.
Yeah, but
also at issue, though, is whether or not the Commission should have any authority relative to the Northwest Gas Pipeline Project as well. Mm-hmm. And turn them off and then turn on some equivalent in another couple of years could create as cumbersome.
But should we keep a commission for one decision because we might need them 2 years down the road?
May I interpose with something completely unrelated, just because I don't like to say chairman, and because otherwise I'll forget. I want two bills drafted, I'll even admit what they are, by the Commerce Committee, resolutions. One of them addressed to the FAA about this insanity about security and such, and maybe an accompanying press release. And even Randolph will agree with that one. You know what I'm talking about. They want to have all kinds
hijack
of
security
for air taxi operators, just like they do for the big air carriers.
You can't fly a hunter's guns with a hunter.
Look in today's Anchorage News. You
know? Yeah.
How do you put a fence around a float plane is one of the headlines in today's paper.
I noticed that Mr. Mass just walked in.
FAA.
The FAA. It's a proposed regulation.
Yeah.
Here we go. In the Federal Register, Part 3, Aircraft and Airport Security, Air Carrier Operations. Those are proposed regulations. This is the position that has been taken by the Air Carriers Association.
We're having a meeting, and we're still in session and on the record, but we just did something that you might be interested in. I requested that there be a resolution drafted, sponsored by the Commerce Committee, protesting or asking for reconsideration on this damned security issue, which is another example of people in Washington forgetting that their place is different from Washington.
Thank you. That's very much
appreciated. Are there any federal funds we could give back that would interest me?
Probably about $120 million.
Hey, let's not give back any federal funds. Let's just send Bob Faith and his whole fourth floor back.
I have another resolution I'm interested in, and it'll be by the Commerce Committee, whether the committee agrees, under the old traditional way that the legislature used to run, and that is, if the Wien schedule is what I think it is, a very serious resolution addressed to the CAB and the chairman of the board, president, and the board of directors of Wien Airlines about the disservice they're providing the people in Fairbanks and Juneau by not adequately serving that certificate or even pretending to now that they go through Anchorage. After all of the years that they fought for that route, and we fought for them to have it. Now, you know, check the schedules. Now, maybe it was just temporary, and they're really going to go back to flying that thing, but I really thought that when they got their extension to Seattle, which is the whole reason that the Fairbanks Civic Parties, when I was one of their lawyers, fought to get them that extension the first time in 1970, the economic reasons were it would make the Fairbanks Juneau run more economically feasible, make it part of a puddle jumper on the way to Seattle. And instead, what they're doing is they're just not even flying that route very much anymore, at least as of the last schedule I looked at. They're just going by way of Anchorage. You know, the ghost of Ray Peterson's hate of Fairbanks is still there. And as long as the Capitol Hill is still in Juneau, whatever your views are, people in my district would really like to be able to get to Juneau quickly, you know, without having to lay over in Anchorage for 20 minutes or an hour and a half or 3 hours.
Mr. Chairman, I might also point out that in addition to the problems you're addressing in terms of that particular route, there are, again, the voices coming out of rural Alaska about the very severe cutback in service on the part of Wien to places like Nome, Kotzebue, Galena.
Ask them to do two resolutions in draft, and I'll look to see what they look like. Maybe we'll combine them, or maybe we'll do them once. We'll do them one at a time. Do I agree to that part, too?
You say, I would go for this. I'd be the one more specifically to go with this, to do a resolution against this. Even Mandoff would go for that. I said, hell, I'd be more likely to go for it.
Well, I think that is such that I would be, I will even presume to that Mr. Bettisworth and Mr. Malone and Mr. Osterbach will not object if you have a drafted press release saying that this is something that is unanimously supported by the committee. I would be very surprised if they would object.
Probably I'd call them by phone.
Yeah, just check with them. You know, Alvin will probably curse mildly and saying, why are you bothering to call him and ask him such a dumb question? But
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
this resolution going to be run?
Mr. Master, have you met the committee?
I met everyone individually.
Okay, fine, go ahead. For the record, since we are on the record, you are Mr. Fred Mast of the
Alaska Air Carriers Association.
Okay, go ahead.
If you're running this as a resolution through the legislature regarding the FAA, it needs to be moved quickly too.
Yeah.
Because the deadline for comment to the FAA is the 28th of January.
Okay, well, I would ask the Speaker for one committee referral. It wouldn't have a fiscal note. I would ask I would probably talk to Senator Bradley. I assume he would get it. I'd be amazed if he would have any problem with the resolution. And maybe we could just, you know, try to shoot it through as fast as we can.
Yeah. This is one issue in which we can agree and not appear self-serving. This is a real problem.
Well, self-serving as far as ourselves in Alaska is concerned,
right.
I suppose.
Without appearing
it's just absolutely asinine.
Yes,
I'd give him back.
All the world is obviously made up of crowded networks involving DC-9s and 737s and larger aircraft and traffic nets like National Airport in Washington and O'Hare and Chicago, and there's nowhere else in the United States that has any different problem, right? That's the kind of mentality that resulted in that regulation.
Well, I have a hunch that this is going to be as much of a problem in Delaware as it is in Anchorage.
Sure, Minnesota, Idaho.
Why don't you send it down to me?
With regard to other matters,
I'm going to have to go
to the
We're almost
meeting.
At the point of adjourning. Your next meeting's at 3.
No, it was 2:30.
Oh, okay. Well, we've done this to you before, Rick. So nice to have a quorum. I don't even know
three times today.
Mr. Chairman, can I just very quickly...
Parting shot.
Very quickly detailed for the committee what I've been doing all summer.
We have been getting snatches of it for about the last hour, but go ahead.
Okay. My
galley a bit, sir.
My major concentration of activity this summer has been almost exclusively dealing with Sunset through what's coming up next year as well as what has happened to us last year. A little of the work that I have been doing is starting to service with some of the Anchorage legislators. It will be servicing with many more legislators around the state, because I have been essentially giving the professional associations and members of the various professions, especially through occupational licensing, but also through the Air Carriers Association, the Trucking Association, political lessons in what they have to do if they want to survive the Sunset process.
Or at least do their best shot.
Is in effect. As a result, at times I have specifically targeted certain legislators as the people who should be the recipients of the lobbying effort.
I plead guilty. I set the example. I did it myself at the beginning of the interim. Why Randolph hasn't heard from very many people, because he isn't a target right now. That's why Helford and Munson have probably gotten lots of calls, including unsolicited come over to see the dentist immediately calls and things like that.
Why aren't I a target?
Yeah, you can't get an appointment for 6 weeks. What do you mean?
Concurrent with the Political Science 101 course on Sunset, I have also been collecting quite a bit of additional new information from the outfits that are operating around the state. An invitation has been extended, for example, on the part of the Marine pilots to go out and take a ride with them into Valdez. On one of the tankers, I hope to be able to follow that up.
Well, we all get to go too.
I am meeting with the Marine pilots. I'm meeting with the Marine pilots here on Monday. And
such a good storm at the last week of January.
And if you want to run up three stories on the outside of a tanker in rolling seas, then I'm sure they will be more than glad to invite you to come along. I bring this up, the chairman and I have discussed this on a couple of occasions. I am looking right now to find some justification to go back to Colorado following the committee hearings on the 17th of December to work with the National Conference of State Legislature, the auditor from the state of Colorado, and with people from the University of Colorado at Boulder in a full, much more detailed review of the Sunset process, so that the report that I've outlined to you earlier will in fact carry the weight of the one state that has been exemplary. I don't know whether or not the justification for that travel will be there.
Well, presumably if that's done, and also these other things are happening, presuming that Alan does overlap with his successor in his job by 30 days, most of what I hope you'll be doing is to be doing a rather extensive report, kind of rambling comments or something like that, over that 30-day period, in addition to showing everybody where the bathroom and the skeletons in the closet are and all that sort of thing. For Mr. Mass information, Alan will, unless other job opportunities arise earlier than he understands or other different things happen, he'll be with the committee the first 30 days of the session. He will overlap with his successor, as another gentleman from Fairbanks, when they have bought there, and is very qualified. And so you'll probably want to get to that. Yeah. A lot like that.
Alan's going to go straight.
Well, not necessarily.
He's going to go to work for the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce.
And Mr. Halpert, would you do me the favor of thanking Mr. Malone about your new hats that you're wearing in the Finance Subcommittee of this committee, and to the extent that lobbyists like Mr. Mast are interested in budgets of groups like the ATC and others?
We'll see that they get at least $30,000 next year.
They should probably talk to you about it, because I've asked you and Rick to be our liaison with House Finance Committee. It happens. Every year you start rebuilding bridges, because the constant problem is Finance Committee acts. The joke I always use, like a French horn section in a symphony orchestra, they only talk to each other and they don't realize they're doing that, because it just comes to work 18, 19 hours a day on the committee. result, sometimes we have things fall through the cracks. So they're to basically keep track of what's really happening in the budget as it relates to interests and concern of the Commerce Committee, including, among many other things,
aircraft financing.
Yeah, the Division of Commerce and Economic Development's category on the Alaska Transportation Commission. Okay. Anything other else that you're interested in, probably is also under Commerce Committee.
The two primary budget categories are consumer protection right now. Our consumer protection and development. So to the extent that other members of the committee have information or develop information relative to the operations, the budget submissions of that entire umbrella of commerce and economic development, be sure to pass it to me. I'll make sure that it gets to the committee members.
Anybody have any flaky ideas on the record out front that you'd like to throw out and suggest to the chairman and such that there's something to do with the bill or resolution by the Commerce Committee? I just expressed two pet peeves of mine.
I can't remember which state it was, and I was telling Alan about this before. There is a state that when somebody decides that their particular area has to be licensed, before a bill can ever be submitted by a legislator or pushed through that way, it has to go before this particular body that says, and they have to produce a real need from the public for protection. You know, this has happened, this has happened, this has happened because we don't have any licensing. And, you know, as we see...
Bob Ziegler agree with
you? Sounds too logical.
Give up the legislative prerogative?
Well, the thing is, we've just barely started as a state, and look at what we've already developed as far as proliferation of boards and commissions go, and just in the if they're really developed to protect the public, then there ought to really be a public need specified before it starts going before separate committees doing their pitch, and generally we don't even ask for that kind of proof.
That sounds very astounding to me, because it sounds to me like something that many state Supreme Courts would have ruled to be an improper delegation of the legislative authority. I mean, as an analog to many of the related constitutional decisions involving the extent to which legislatures can and cannot authorize administrative agencies to promulgate regulations, it's also a delegation.
Probably
I'd be
done by
curious to see what state it is and what they did.
I can't remember.
Mr. Chairman, I believe I have some information on that. I think the Joyce is referring to the Department of Regulatory Authorities for the state of Colorado.
Can you find out about that?
Yes, I just give us a
little help.
Richard, see you December 17th.
Okay.
You going to have any reason to be in Fairbanks on the 15th of December?
What's going on?
Well, besides being Hanukkah, since the new administrative assistant following Mr. Will is of that persuasion, it's also on Christmas party, but, you know.
You never can tell. I might be there. I don't know.
Randolph's not invited because most of my guests would eat him alive as soon as he walks in the door. I try to tell him that he's a nice guy, but, you know what these people who don't get elected legislatures are. They're rabid, non-professional politicians.
I will be a contact.
There's only three or four, though. Those are not a big bunch.
And if anybody's serious about wanting to take a ride,
I'll be back
tanker.
Just before then, probably.
Okay. No, I make a special
My wife might want to see me for a day or two.
I'll check.
Yeah, I saw her last night. She said she would sure like to.
That's off the record.
We're still on the record. I don't think there's any other business to come before the committee at this time. We will be adjourned until 9 a.m. Anchorage time, or we're starting at 8.
Mr. Chairman, before we... adjourned. We will be starting at 9 o'clock. We will go on to the teleconference network at 10:30.
Right. Well, I understand that. To explain what we're talking about, we're going to do a little stuff before we go on to the teleconference. We do, and I'm going to want to do a little bit more than I had discussed with you earlier about telecommunications. I don't think it's necessary to go in the evening on that or not. Use a teleconference every day. But it'll be APUC and it'll be telecommunications. Those two
last piece of information before we adjourn. The House Labor Management Committee has contracted with
Dr. Richard Feinberg to do some detailed work in the workman's compensation insurance area.
Oh.
Mr. Feinberg is going to be going at it primarily through the workman's comp board and the comp structure. However, because we are also involved through the Division of Insurance, I have extended the resources of the committee to him and have presently requested of both Mr. Julius Brecht and Mr. Kenneth Moore, the Director of Division of Insurance, that they provide some rather specific information to Mr. Feinberg when he goes to Juneau in about 2 weeks.
Is Labor Management going to issue a press release saying that?
I don't know if that has been contemplated, but I imagine that it could
certainly draw a lot of bees. That might do a little bit of good, too. I would hire one of the best investigative reporters in the state of Ohio.
As a result, workman's comp and insurance rate making in the state may prove to be a very significant area of involvement for this committee as well next session.
Learn your math, all of you. We are adjourned till 9 a.m. December 17 in Anchorage, place to be announced.